Good morning, and welcome to Coffee Break. We're glad you checked us out today, and I'm excited about this podcast today because we have a very special guest. I'd like to welcome Bob Pardon to my Coffee Break podcast. Bob has been a friend of mine for many years, and he is an ordained Reformed Episcopal pastor and a graduate of Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary. I should say University of Michigan first, right? We should get the pecking order straight here.
Absolutely.
And then Gordon Conwell, and then Princeton Theological Seminary for your master's theology. MDiv first, right?
Yes.
And then master's of theology. And been a pastor for many years, and has been for about 20 years, right? The director of the New England Institute for Religious Research and Meadowhaven in Massachusetts here. And so welcome, Bob. We're glad you're here today.
It's great to be here.
We have known you for a long time and appreciated your friendship. Specifically, you and your wife, Judy, have had an incredible work in a real unique area in working with people that have come out of destructive groups. We would call them destructive groups, cults. And we have followed your ministry and, in fact, benefited from your ministry many, many times. I wonder if you could, just to start off today, say something about the word cult.
Well, cult is a term that is widely thrown around in the media. One man's cult is another man's religion. So it's very pejorative in most instances. We rarely use the term unless we're in a context where we can control the definition, because it is a wide-ranging word in terms of its definition.
Yeah. So you and I just came back from a conference in Washington, D.C. last week with the International Cultic Studies Association, which isn't specifically a Christian group, right?
No, it's not. It's not. It's probably got about 30% Christians in it, but it is... Its mission is really to be able to help individuals who have come out of cultic, high-control, destructive environments, some religious, some not religious.
And it was a great conference. I completely enjoyed attending, and I appreciated being you and Judy's guest at this conference with about 200 people, right?
Yeah, at least, probably closer to three.
Yeah. So I learned a lot, and it was humbling, actually, to be around so many people that had really been damaged and injured in a lot of ways through a wide spectrum of groups. Bob, would you say that there are shades or degrees of cultishness?
Yeah, definitely. If you look at cult in its pejorative sense, it's on a continuum. And again, we usually use the term a high-control destructive group or an aberrant Christian group. And the issue is that you can have one end of the continuum where things are very, very benign. It might just be the kind of environment where a church or a local Bible study or some individual who is kind of setting himself up as a pastor, quote-unquote, is exercising what we would call undue influence over an individual.
And that was an interesting term I learned, undue influence, last week. As you know, I'm Protestant chaplain at the university over here, and there's a certain amount of discussion about the idea that we shouldn't, within the various religious traditions that represent the center for religious and spiritual life over there, that we shouldn't cross any boundaries, and we should really, there's sort of a sentiment right now that we shouldn't even really talk about our own specific faith in any kind of an evangelistic way at all, that we should only talk in terms of education, and that we would draw strict boundaries around ourselves and sort of self-muzzle. That's really the sentiment on the part of some. But at this conference that you and I were at, I heard that term for the first time, undue influence. Could you say something about that, what that kind of means?
Yeah, it's essentially where the individual, unbeknownst to themselves, are having an influence exercised over them, often in the name of God or the name of some higher authority, that really limits their ability to make choices, freely make choices about what they believe, what they can do, what their behavior should be, all of those kinds of issues. So that's one end of the continuum. That undue influence, when you take it to the far end of this continuum in a negative way, is one where you can actually have loss of life. And some of the groups that we've worked with have exercised extreme physical and sexual abuse in order to maintain control over their membership, even to the point where people have died. And that's usually the stuff that you see in the newspapers, Branch Davidians, Heaven's Gate, People's Temple, those kind of situations.
Right, and I think that the whole country is very wary of any groups, whether they're religious or not religious, that would jeopardize and place at risk people, particularly younger people, but really any people. The whole country is very, very alert to that, it seems to me, although it seems to be on the increase. Would you say that cults or, the far end of the spectrum is on the increase or on the decrease in our country today?
I would say it's definitely on the increase. Reason being that the sensationalistic, almost institutionalized groups, you don't see them much in the news anymore. Hmm. What you do see are a lot of these tiny one-on-one, one-on-four-five family groups, small churches, sometimes denominational churches where there is a breakaway in some way or another that is exercising this kind of really undue influence over its membership.
That's interesting, Bob. So let me just ask another question back on the word cult. You seem to understand that there are different spheres of influence within the, using the word cult. For instance, you said something to me earlier about there's a sociological aspect that a group might be cultic, and then there's a theological aspect. So if you know, it doesn't seem popular today in the media to refer to the Mormon Church as a cult, but how would you respond to that if someone said, are Mormons cults, or are they is that group a very large group, by the way? And I'm aware that there are different types of Mormons, too, but would you say that that's a cult?
Not in the way that society normally understands the term. Again, Ron Enroth defines cults in three different ways. He speaks of them in a sensationalistic way, which is what the National Enquirer approach, inquiring minds want to know. It's the sensationalistic aspects of a group. Multiple marriages with a leader, where there's physical abuse going on, those kinds of things. Then there is, as you mentioned, what's called the social-psychological approach. And this is where there is the undue influence. You look at how power and authority are exercised in the group. The third way is the theological, as you mentioned. And we would say in that context there, if you're looking at Mormonism, it definitely is what we would call a heretical group. It's a group which tries to package itself as being Christian when in reality it denies historic Christianity to the core. And it's interesting how over the years Mormonism has been morphing or transforming itself to be more socially acceptable. For instance, back in the 80s, it used to be that they passed around the Book of Mormon to anyone who was inquiring. Then they changed the name to the Book of Mormon, Another Testament of Jesus Christ. And that was done strictly to gain credibility on the coattails of the church. Danny Ainge, who is the general manager of the Boston Celtics, he early on, as a Mormon, was asked if he was a Christian, and he said, no, I'm a Mormon. That has all changed now. Mormons package themselves as being just a Christian denomination, and according to a Barna poll and a Pew poll, that's essentially how most Americans view Mormonism.
Man, I'm getting confused, Bob. I mean, what is a Christian anymore? You know, it's a large million-member groups call themselves Christian, and I call myself a Christian. You call yourself a Christian. Sometimes the United States is looked at as a Judeo-Christian country. It's getting confusing, isn't it?
Absolutely.
What about the Jehovah's Witnesses? Would that be a heretical group, an aberrant?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a heretical group, and it also is a very aberrant group in the sense that they exercise a lot of undue influence over their membership. We have met with witnesses for years and years and years, and their lives are completely circumscribed by the organization itself. So what ends up happening in these kind of groups is, particularly where it's a Bible-based group, like Mormonism, but more so the Jehovah's Witnesses, which really are institutionalized, is the member confuses their commitment to God with their commitment to the organization. The two become synonymous. So to leave one is to leave the other.
Wow, that's kind of scary, actually. Just to shift gears a little bit, a thought comes to my mind. It seems like whenever I mention this word cult or, you know, talk about one of these larger groups in some of my circles, particularly, and this is where I'm probably going to get in trouble here, but I want this to be a compelling podcast, and so I got to stir up a little bit of stuff here. But, excuse me, I find that my Roman Catholic friends just frankly aren't much interested. And I think that's because these groups are so large and significant in our culture, I don't know how you can not be interested, but they just don't seem at all interested. Maybe it's because they're large too. What do you think?
I think the main issue with Catholicism is that it is monolithic and it is a whole culture. And you do have within Catholicism, historically as well as at this current day, groups that have been essentially disenfranchised by the Pope. One is called the Legionaries of Christ, who are a very destructive organization within the Catholic Church. Another group that has created a lot of problems is called Tradition, Family, and Property, which is a Catholic organization, monastic or semi-monastic. And so these groups exist within Catholicism as well. It's just that it is so monolithic that it is a minor theme.
Yeah. Well, that's helpful, Bob. I find myself going back to my own Bible and just trying to keep a handle on the core truths of our faith. You and I share the same faith, and we enjoy the scripture, we enjoy the tradition of the church to the extent that our beliefs have been blessed and informed by great leaders of the church over 2,000 years. But with the cults, is it not curious that their traditions go back 150 years? And that's really about as far back as any of them goes.
Well, the major ones.
Major ones.
But you find that these groups go all the way back to the beginning of the church. You find them all down through history, be it the Montanists with Tertullian in the 4th century, up until you've got the Albigenses and a number of different groups that existed in Europe that were really very, very cultic in their exercise of what we'd call undue influence over their membership and or real heretical teachings.
So, Bob, if a person, let's say just a generic person or an average person, maybe 40 years old, is hungry spiritually and they want to find some religion in their life at that point, and they sort of take an objective approach, and maybe they had an upbringing in a church, but it wasn't fully satisfying at all, so they're looking for something, and they meet a nice group of people. Let's say they go camping in New Hampshire or something, and they meet a nice group of people, and this group seems to have a religious flavor to them. And what would be the things that they should be wary of? Because there's a lot of cults that, I don't mean in camping ministries, but that are out there that are sort of predatory.
Yeah, that's indeed the case. And sadly, we live in a time and in a culture where there aren't a whole lot of checks and balances like might have existed 50 years ago. So the individual needs to ask questions. They need to ask questions like, what does this group really believe? Is this a commitment to an organization, or is this something that, if I'm interested in it, is going to enhance my walk with God? Do they claim to be elitist, that they are the only ones that have truth, or that they have a better handle on truth than the other individuals around who might claim to be following Christ? So these kind of questions really need to be asked. Does the leader have does he claim to have, or is he perceived to have, a direct pipeline to God with no real accountability? He might have individuals around him who he says he's accountable to, but does he really have accountability where he can be challenged?
Yeah, that's helpful. That's helpful, Bob. What? Let me just ask you a personal question at this point. What? Why are you interested? Why are you and Judy interested in this particular pursuit of research and therapy that you've been giving to people for all these years? Why does it float your boat?
Well, I've always had an interest in apologetics ever since I became a Christian back at the University of Michigan through Campus Crusade for Christ back in the 70s. And I was also approached at that time, soon after I came to Christ, by some what would be considered really destructive cults. One was the then Children of God, which is now called the Family of God, and they came through campus with a busload of individuals who were quoting the Bible and saying you need to give up everything that you own and come follow them if you're truly going to serve God.
And that was compelling?
That was to me at the time.
Yeah.
And so I considered it for a while, but by God's grace didn't go. Then I was approached by another group called The Process, which was an amalgamation of Christianity and Satanism. And that was a little bit more scary and weird, so I ended up not going with them. But that kind of, in the beginning, sparked my interest in getting involved in this arena. My first pastorate in Middleborough, there was a group that came into town, started a Christian bookstore. And I thought, great, they started coming to our church, and they really wanted to be involved, and they were very kind and gracious. Everyone liked them. They were full of energy. Well, as I got to know them more, they were part of what is called the Oneness Movement. They were Oneness Pentecostals. Okay. So essentially, they believed that Jesus was God, but they deny they believe that the Father actually is God, but they deny the Trinity.
So they were non-Trinitarian.
Yeah, it's a non-Trinitarian group.
Yeah, interesting. So what about Judy? What drew her into this? Why is she interesting? Because she's really been your co-director for a number of years.
Yeah.
And your wife, Judy, is a retired teacher, correct?
Yes.
And she has her master's from?
Cambridge College.
Cambridge College.
In Boston.
So lots of us are in the ministry and our wives have a whole separate thing. You and Judy are a little bit, you're interesting to me in that you're both interested. You've both been therapy.
Right.
Therapist for people. So what's her interest in this?
Well, when she was teaching, she had she was teaching up in Watertown, and many of her students, it was a multi-ethnic environment that she taught in, and so she would have individuals from a lot of different faith systems that were part of her classes, from first grade to fifth grade. And she had Jehovah's Witnesses, Mormons, and they often would bring to her desk issues that they were struggling with, even at their very young ages, with interfacing with the culture in which she was teaching. And so she began to develop an interest in that. And then when we met, there were three other individuals as well who began to really consider establishing the New England Institute of Religious Research. So Judy had kind of an interest, I think probably, that was built off of my interest, but had some background of her own that was always intriguing.
Yeah, and she's been invaluable to you. And when I sat with you all, we ministered together to somebody back in the winter, I was really, really appreciative and impressed with the level of compassion she showed to that person.
Yeah.
It was extraordinary.
Yeah, I wouldn't be where I am today in all of this if it wasn't for Judy.
So, Bob, let me just take a break here and say that this is the Coffee Break podcast. My name is Neil Damgard, and we're enjoying talking with Bob Pardon from the New England Institute for Religious Research in Meadow Haven, which is a facility in Lakeville, Massachusetts, having a great ministry. Our producer is Bob Perrin, who is here helping us out from South Coast Multimedia, and we are glad you're listening in on our podcast today. Let me just ask you, Bob, also another question. At the conference you and I were at in D.C. last week, I kept hearing this term, and I got to tell you, it's unsettling to me, Bible-based cults. Well, this church that employs me here, I'm the pastor of Dartmouth Bible Church, And when I hear someone talks about Bible-based cults, I get a little nervous. Could you explain what that category of cults means?
Well, Judy and I have been watching you, Neil, because there's been real concern here.
But essentially, you better write up a report on us, and we'll have to read it.
Essentially, a Bible-based cult is an organization that preaches the gospel. You look on their website, if they've got a web page, it's orthodox. There's not anything that gets really kind of weird in their doctrinal understanding. It fits within historic Christianity. But essentially what happens in these groups is the Bible is used to enslave an individual to a system versus really enhancing their ability to become the man or woman of God that God wants them to be. So they're enslaved to a system versus being freed to serve God.
Well, that's an excellent definition, but I would also think there's some fuzzy areas there too that probably every group on the planet says we want to enhance your ability to be the person God wants you to be, but then it mutates into something.
Well, yeah, and this hits on something else. These groups, these are not con artists. These are not individuals who are down on Broadway in Manhattan playing three-card Monte with people that are going by. They really, really believe what they are saying.
So
they are what we
sincerity.
Call true believers.
They're sincere.
Absolutely. That's part of what makes it so enticing, is these people really believe what they're telling you.
That's
here.
True.
So why would you not listen to this and pursue it?
Okay, I don't want to hijack the conversation here, but I get a burning question here, because this was something that my family became involved in, and I don't even know if you're aware of this, but are you familiar with Vision Forum? And
Yes.
Biblical Patriarchy.
Yep.
Okay.
We've had individuals at Meadowhaven who came out of that.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, because the idea of biblical patriarchy was something that was very interesting to my wife and I. We actually left this area, moved up to New Hampshire to join a church with these folks. The church disintegrated after 6 months because the leader lost his daughter, was no longer considered a patriarch.
Right.
But we continued seeing some faults with the leadership. They were human, and we kind of backed away a little bit. But we raised our children under the idea that, you know, as a husband and a father, I was the head of the family, which is a biblical principle.
Sure.
And so we didn't buy into the whole package. But now, the leader of the movement, Doug Phillips, has been caught in a sexual scandal.
Yes.
Here's a man who preached fidelity and, you know, family values, and he was caught with his pants down.
This happens. This happens when, you know, leaders, I don't know, I'm not familiar with that particular group, but you both are, but there are many cases of leaders who are sincere, and, you know, they have a following, but they have a serious crack in their character. And
that's humbling to me.
Well, the issue I think that arises, you raise a good question, Bob, you know, what's going on here, because who wouldn't agree with the biblical principles that a lot of the patriarchy movement has been built upon here? It's the same issue that Gothard has struggled with in Bill Gothard Ministries, and essentially has been defrocked, kicked out, had to resign.
And when I first became a Christian, the first probably 10 years of my Christian walk, Bill Gothard and the Institute for Basic Youth Conflicts was one of the big conferences that people loved.
I went to a number of them myself and gained some things from them. The difficulty here is that these groups take legitimate biblical principles like discipleship, authority, headship, any of these kinds of issues, principles, virtues that are demonstrated in scriptures, and they take that legitimate principle to an extreme that the scriptures never sanctioned. That's the difficulty that goes on there. So it's not that in the International Churches of Christ, the old Boston Church of Christ, where they really emphasize discipleship. Scriptures talk about discipleship. Who would want to say they're pursuing Christ and not want to be a disciple? but they take it to an extreme that the Bible never sanctioned. It's the same with the patriarchy movement. What ends up happening is that it gives biblically to the family and to the father an authority that really is vested more in the Old Testament and based upon certain, I would say, legalistic items that you have to follow versus grace and being the leader of my family because Christ is head of the church in a caring, compassionate, loving way. And so it takes that to an extreme, mm-hmm. and it creates real issues. Right. But I certainly think that there is headship, that the father should be the head of the home, but not in the way that it's defined in vision form or quiverful.
Right. There, and I did notice that several of the leaders, they lost their children. I was in the home of one of these leaders, I saw the oppression there.
Yes, yes.
And we marveled at it after we left. We were like, wow, this is kind of bizarre. But we kind of just excused it because, you know, they were the leader of the movement.
Exactly,
We weren't forced to buy into that.
That's the way all these groups operate. Right. And there's a part of you in the midst of it that says, there's something wrong with this. It doesn't smell right. It doesn't feel right. But it can be justified by the leadership at times by pulling out certain scriptures and saying, what about this? What about that? What about that? It's like, there's a number of these kind of movements. The old shepherding movement that was really, really strong back in the 70s and 80s. I don't know if you remember this, Neil, but Derek Prince, Bob Mumford,
I had friends Garlington, who were very much part of the shepherding movement.
Yeah, these were Don Basho.
Those leaders, yeah.
Again, a legitimate biblical principle about being under authority and having someone that really serves as your shepherd in a caring way, but became so oppressive and top-heavy that lives were destroyed. And eventually the leadership, Mumford, came out in Charisma magazine and retracted all of the abuse that had been really perpetrated in the name of shepherding that he unleashed in all of that.
It has been a great opportunity to talk to you today, Bob. Both you, Bobs, I appreciate you very much, and we want to bring this to a conclusion today, and probably this is going to be a two-part.
Well, thank you very much. It's a real pleasure to be here.
This is this has been the Coffee Break podcast, and I hope this has been interesting to you. You can get in touch with me at any time through Neil Damgard. .com or through the Facebook page or now through iTunes, right, Bob? You want to say something, Bob, about the iTunes access? What does that mean, Ian?
Yes, all you need to do is go to www.neildamgard.com, look at the page that says subscribe to the podcast or how to subscribe to the podcast, and the directions are right there. There's also an option if you want to receive an RSS feed, which is the little orange logo with the waves. You can click on that, and you can have notifications sent to your email.
Okay, well, we're glad you tuned in today, and hope that you'll come back and listen to podcasts in the future on Coffee Break.